The Bridge d'Artefact, le média professionnel pour en savoir plus sur la data et l'intelligence artificielle. Aujourd'hui, un nouvel entretien avec un data leader en vidéo et podcast.
Hi, and welcome to The Bridge. Today's session is a little bit different. We're going to talk about AI and the artists. So at Artefact, we strongly believe that art and tech is deeply linked. For instance, we have organized an AI film festival a few months ago, rewarding creative mindset for AI film producers. My name is Julien. I am a managing partner at Artefact, and I'm with Nicolas today.
Hi, Julien. Thank you for having me today. So I'm Nicolas. I'm working as a consultant for Artefact. I specialize myself on AI product management. I have 6 years experience on generative AI, covering roles from data scientist to technical product manager. I worked on products on different industries like healthcare, video game, and also music. I was in fact a researcher at Tsinghua University in Beijing, where I work alongside with a startup on music generation with GPT. So that was back in 2019. And I was really focusing on the diversity of the generation. So we've explored different architecture with GPT and others. So my conviction at that time was that the diversity would come from more user control. And after this research time, I had opportunities to keep working on the topic, keep learning, because there have been a lot of new research that arrived alongside the years. And I also shared this topic with multiple audiences, and I'm very happy to do it with you today.
That's impressive. Thank you.
So, Julien, how will generative AI and digitalization transformed the AI industry in the last few decades?
Yeah, and a lot happened. Today in 2025, the recording music industry is a $60 billion market. And according to studies, AI is already generating 3 to 4 billion with services, with products that can help with any kind of things in the music industry. But let's get back a few decades ago, in the 2000s when we had the MP3 crisis. So the music industry dropped because of that, because of piracy and so on. And then came the streaming platforms like Spotify and Deezer and so on. So it was back in 2008 or 9. And a lot of things happened since then. When Daniel Ek, the founder of Spotify, reached out with the different labels, telling them that the model is changing and that tomorrow they will have to share their music almost for free, because at this time we didn't have paying €10 or $10 for a service. It's going to be for free, and you're going to get some revenue with ads, for instance. It was a drastic change in the mindset and the business model. Okay, so and in terms of music production, it has become easier and easier to produce music. Like back in the days, you needed to be a solid musician, with technical skills, theoretical skills, and so on. And over the last 10 years, it has become so easy, with computer programs and samples and so on, to build a song without having strong musical knowledge, which is kind of interesting.
Okay, so yeah, you can in fact see that now producing a very good quality music is easier and easier with technology. Yeah. And you say it started in the beginning of the century, but in fact technology has been a major impact on the industries for maybe almost a century or even more. In the 50s you can think about the innovation around the electricity, where you have the electric amplifiers, the electric guitar, and then it give birth to new genres, new instruments. Yeah. You can think of Chuck Berry. Johnny B. Goode. It was a complete different sound, complete different genre, and it keep on going. If you remember the 70s or 80s sound, you always think about a synthesizer or the beginning of techno music. With groups Kraftwerk and Popcorn, starting also completely different sounds. And on the diffusion aspect, side of things, you also have the compact disc from Sony, and with the Walkman that enables a lot of people to listen to music every time of the day. It's also had a huge impact on how we consume music.
Exactly.
So in fact, Gen AI can be seen as just the next step on this process. It's already working for text and pictures, maybe even videos with tools like Suno. You can. I tried Suno. I don't know if you've heard about it.
Yes, I did. It's impressive. Yeah.
So the idea is that it's basically a ChatGPT for music. You write a prompt, instruction to the model, and you get a music right after that. You can write like 5 words and you get a music.
Exactly. So that's a full song. You get a full song.
A full song. That's impressive. And I actually had a lot of fun with it during the Christmas holidays, trying to work with my family on a little Christmas song, personalized Christmas song. And you can like choose the lyrics, choose the genre, and you have it. And I think for maybe some people, it might be the first time they actually compose music, or they feel like they're creating music. So you have tools like Suno, there's also Udio. So it starts to really grow.
Yeah, for sure.
But somehow for the real artist, I also had some feedbacks that say that they are not completely into these kind of tools because they have their creative mindset. They want to share some emotions, some experience. Mm. And for doing that, well, in fact, they need more control. What do you think about this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm a bit of a music enthusiast also, and so I like to do some songwriting and music producing sometimes. This is what you said. So what the workflow has changed like drastically over the last 10 years, I would say. First, you needed like to compose your guitars, your bass, the piano, the drums, and so on. Then you had access to a massive amount of samples, royalty-free samples that you can find, for instance, on platforms like Splice, for example, which is super famous for that. That will help you to bring like some sparks to your songs, and you don't need like to compose these things. You can just take them, put them in your session, and just judge if it's going to work out or not. And as you said, the next step is Gen AI, and Suno is a very interesting tool. But it's generating an A to Z, song. So you don't have any. So as you said, you can say, this is the genre I want. This is the kind of mood I want, something energetic or romantic and so on. The tempo would be this. And then you have your song. So personally, in my workflow, this is not that useful. It can be useful if you want to generate a song very quickly. But in my workflow, I need more granular control on what I do. So on samples, on particular instruments and so on, and this is where maybe Suno is a little bit limiting, I would say.
Yeah.
But for a music producer, you need something that is a little bit more complex.
Okay.
One tool that I've tried over the last week, which is super impressive, is called Ace Studio, and it's specifically focused on the vocals part, on the vocal part. So if you need some singing, you can. Based on the melody that you will generate with MIDI, so you can say la 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 la, or something like this. You just write with a pen on your computer. You can choose amongst like I don't know 70 different vocal types. Whether it's a woman, it's a man, it could be a choir with like a many different people, and you have this. And you can ask like to generate, you can just prompt the text that you want with a specific accent, whether it's in English or in French or Spanish or whatever, and it will generate that. And for me, working in tech like you on a daily basis, it is super complicated to judge if it's something that has been generated by someone or by an AI, so which is pretty impressive. So it can like it can help you save time. If you want to try a vocal top line, for instance, AI is gonna help you with this. You can also train the model. For instance, I don't sing very well, but when I do music, I have a singer working with me. I can train the model with his singing, which is impressive. So I can import vocal part that I've recorded in the past with him. And it can like generate something with his vocals. So it's pretty impressive when sometimes we are out of ideas and we you need to save his voice because it consumes energy and the vocal cords when you're recording for hours. It can be like a tool that is helping in your workflow to test out some scenarios or just add some layers with like additional person, for instance, without having to find the right person or a book like a full choirs to record something. That could be sometimes very expensive also when you are an independent artist.
Yeah, of course. This tool sounds really impressive for creative minds. And I think it's not just for like very advanced musicians. Even if you don't have a lot of musical knowledge, and you just, for instance, I have a friend that is a very good singer, but it's not really much into music theory. But in fact, with this tool, he can really just sing a song he wants to compose, and he doesn't have to write things on the music sheet. He can just send it to the tool, and he'll have the music sheet already written for him, just from his singing. Now, that's very impressive. But overall, do you think that with this tool, you have enough control, that you really feel it's your creation, and that you can really, like, tweak a bit, make some little changes? Do you have like a full liberty, or you feel still like restrained?
It is. It depends on the tool, but this is what we need as music producer or songwriter, whether we are experts or just for fun. You need to keep control. I don't want that, like, if I use AI or samples or whatever, it needs to serve like a specific purpose, or like it needs to serve my song. If it's something that is something I don't have control on, it's not gonna work out. So it's all about keeping control on what you do, and you need to find the right tool. So the one I talked about is more focused on vocals. You have another one that is called a Synth GPT. So it works exactly like ChatGPT, but for synthesizers. You just prompt again. I want a synth that is like a, with an 80s vibe or a synthwave vibe, or maybe like a piano that like, looks like maybe like a, something that is a little bit more classical. It will generate the sound, and then you can play on your keyboards and it will use the sound that is generated, which is super powerful. But once again, this is for the synth. The other one was for the vocals, but I can imagine that like in the upcoming months or years, you're gonna have like your little agents that can help you on the different instruments, maybe on the piano part, on the guitars, on the drums, on the vocals. But it's, you will have to keep control on that and judging what is useful for your songs. This is always this, how it can serve your art.
Yes, correct, exactly. So I've remember that back in 2017 or 2018, the Google Magenta's project that were focusing on AI for music at the time, they released like something called the NSynth project, which is like a little box where you can mix between different instruments, different sounds to create a whole new instrument. So it's also a way to like generate a new kind of music and new experiments. But in fact, all of these tools, the A-Studio that you've described, I think the most interesting part for people coming from tech backgrounds like me, and maybe the most impressive, is that you're not really talking about how the AI model is performant. You're not really talking about AI things. You're talking about your experience as a user, what you can do, what you can control, where you click and everything. And I think it really reveals the importance of having a good UX design. And that's really what drives the success of your tool when you're talking to experts. Maybe we can go a bit more into the technical part.
Yeah, yes, that would be interesting. For anyone, like, we know exactly how it works when we want to generate a text or a picture, maybe a video, but how do we generate music technically?
Yeah, so you'll see that, in fact, when we look a bit into the research background of AI in music, you recognize the difference that you've seen between Suno and Ace Studio and other tools, because it really comes from different aspects. But yes, indeed, at the beginning, in fact, we really just use GPT or ChatGPT, and models like the one you use for generating image with Midjourney. So it's called the diffusion models. So to make it simple, you just take this model, the GPT or the diffusion model, but you just change the training data and you put music instead of text or music instead of pictures, and the output will directly be music.
Okay.
So it's really just the same. You don't have to change the code of the model, just train it with different data.
Okay, and so you will have like a typical waveform with specific details that you're asking. I remember back in the days, the first time we had AI in music was for mixing and mastering. You could like use services on the internet or a product where you could pay for automatic mixing and mastering, and this is like basic neural network or spectral analysis. Whether you need the bass to be here, you need the kick to be here, you need the guitars and so on. So you had like equalization, dynamic mixing and so on. Today, it's like a little bit more complex with all these these neural networks and generation, I presume. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yes. So you can, of course, make some more engineer put some more engineer efforts into the model to adapt it to music. But at the beginning, it's really just how you make the data representing the music. So it's about data representation. How do you represent an instrument? How do you represent a note? How do you represent maybe the wave? Because music in the end is just a wave, it's a vibration. And overall, you can think about two different ways of representing music. And the leading idea is, how do I transform my music to put inside my GPT model? Mm-hmm. Like, remember, GPT in fact doesn't take text, it doesn't read text, it just takes tokens.
Yep.
You can think it's a series of numbers. So it's just numbers. How do I convert my music into numbers?
Mm-hmm.
So the first way you can do it is you think about symbolic music. So you think about a music sheet where the composer will directly write notes. And you can think that notes, they are also sequence of events. So you can think notes are a bit like the music, the words form music. So you try to encode the notes as sequence of events. You need to put the pitch, the length of the note, but you can add the velocity or even more complex inputs like the genre, the instrument you use, maybe the bar progression, and
mm-hmm.
you can add as much specific tokens or specific inputs that you want. Then you'll have the sequence that represents your music, and you can transfer this sequence into numbers. And it's basically exactly what GPT is used to train, to be trained with. You put this, you train your GPT, and you take the output will be the similar sequence of token, and you transfer it to music.
And so there's still, like, as we say in data and AI, garbage in, garbage out. So I presume the time you spend or the way you prompt and mm-hmm. how precise you need to be is very linked to the output you're going to get, correct?
Correct, yes. So if you don't put velocity information in your data for the training, you will not have velocity information as the output. So your music will feel very flat. So the data you want out as the output, the music you want in the output, must be very well represented by the data you use to train. So that's data is the key.
Okay.
And it also works if you think about more complex music representation, like waveforms of spectrograms. They are basically 2D graphs, mm-hmm. right? So you have like a function and a curve on this graph, on over the time, so it's based on time and over the frequency, and you can also represent the amplitude, how strong each frequency is at a certain time with colors. So in the end, you just have a 2D image with colors. It's similar to a picture, so you can feed this image into your diffusion model, and just train it and have a Midjourney for music. You can write a text description, and the diffusion model will then generate the spectrogram as a picture. And then there's methods to transform this spectrogram back into a music. And usually, when you do this, you'll have a better quality music because you don't have just the sequence of events. You also have all the sound, the richness of the sound, and everything. So I think what you can conclude from that is that on the first end, you have the symbolic representation where you can have lots of control of exactly what happens at every time, a note, a pitch, a duration, velocity. And on the other side, you directly generate the wave form of the music, which gives a better sound, but you don't have any more control. So you can see here, you find the same problem as between A-Studio and Suno.
Interesting. And so how does the trained data influence your music output that is generated by AI?
So you have two parts on it. You have the training data, and you can also fine-tune your model. So the training data is what we just talked about. So you have a model, it starts from zero, it doesn't know anything. It could be a text model or a music model. It's just raw. You add music data, and it learns about music rules in general. So you put data of all kind of music, all kind of genres, and the output would be a general understanding of the music. But if you're really into a music, or if you need a very specific kind of AI generation, you might want to specialize your model to just generate classic music or jazz music. In that case, you just get only the classical and jazz music from your dataset, and you put it to the model. You retrain your, you fine-tune your model, in fact, with this data. And the output is the model would be very good at classic and jazz, better than if it was just a general model, but it will be specific for classic and jazz.
It reminds me, you know, all these spectral analysis and stuff, when you need to understand how a signal is working, whether it's frequency or time. Mm-hmm. In the industry, we use a lot of IoT sensors to understand if a machine is going to like break or a bearing or a rotor or anything. And you can just, and by understanding if it resonates like in a specific manner, whether it's the frequency or the time, you know if it's going to break like anytime soon. Is it like the same kind of a technique that is working behind?
Yeah, you can. I've come across technical papers that are describing similar similar training process for vibration data on machine or even on the finance financing data. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's similar models. So music, it's not just for fun, as you see, as a use case. It can really help you understand how GPT work on time series. Make you understand how you adapt your GPT to a different time series, or GPT or other models. And I think it's a very good use case for future data scientists, because it's one of the only kind of data that you can train on GPT kind of models okay. and diffusion model. It also requires less resources to get something interesting. I got nice results with less than 100 million parameters. Can compare with the billions of parameters that you need to have a good ChatGPT. So it's a very good use case. So to conclude on this technical part, some key takeaways that can be applied to other industries as well. The first thing is data is the key, as you've said. You've seen that with the same model, just by changing the data into music, you can have music. So remember that what you want as an output must be represented in your training data. The fine-tuning can also be a good way to specialize your model. But it also shows that if your training data is too much imbalanced, like let's say I want a general music model, but I have 90% of my training data only with jazz music, well, I will not have a general AI. I will just have a jazz music AI. So it's the same for your data set. If your data set is unbalanced, you'll have an unbalanced model. And so finally, you've seen that when depending on the way we choose the data format, it really influences the use case. So the way to really think about it, if we just cross with what we've said before about the products, the use case needs to define the model requirements, need to define the data that you want. So you first think of the use case, and then you find the data, and then you train your model. And that's the same process, I think, for most of the AI projects we are working on. Just get back to musicians. Now that you've learned a bit more about the technical parts, maybe you have some ideas of what would be a great AI product for you?
Yeah, I think I can imagine that having an agent that can allow you to work on specific parts of your music composition, whether it's, as I said, like drums or piano or guitars or the vocals. And so we Splice is working today with the samples, but generating like specific parts or helping you, like maybe not starting from scratch, it could help. It could help drastically in the workflow, but once again, it needs to be mapped, I would say, on the exact needs that you have as a creator. I don't think like two musicians have exactly the same needs, but for me, that would be something interesting.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think all we've said about these products are also kind of frightening, because when you think about it, you want to have agents for each part of the music creation process. And I remember, and so you feel that maybe some agents will completely replace some artists or some parts of the music production. And it also reminds me a bit of the samples and MP3 crisis back in the days. There were a huge impact on the legal and how you get the intellectual property rights done well. How do you see the legal field evolve with Gen AI arriving in the industry?
I think it's going to work the same way that every time we had a technology breakthrough, whether it is MP3 or whether it is streaming or Gen AI with text and image, you always have the tech that is ahead of the legal aspects. So we, with the legal and IP, we are always trying to catch up with what's happening, because we are just, first we observe, and then we need to regulate. Of course, this is the way it is. Today, I think we're still in a bit of a gray area in terms of audio generation. We are still in the gray area for image and text. We've seen some lawsuits for some platforms and so on. But for music, this is still something that is a little bit on the sides. But we need the thing is, we need creators to be protected. So this is something that is moving like quite quickly, I think. But still ongoing. So, but creators need to be protected. It's the same when you generate an image, as I said. I want an image that is like Picasso, for instance. You can't do that without Picasso or like the rights owners to have like the royalties, the equivalent of royalties. We need the same thing for music, which is more complicated because tomorrow, if you say, I want you to generate music that is like Bruno Mars or, I don't know, Céline Dion or whatever, yes, how can you track that the thing that you used or parts of the music that you have composed take some part of Bruno Mars or Céline Dion? This is where it gets tricky. So, I don't know if it's going to be with blockchain. I don't know if it's going to be with something that is a... But we will need something to regulate that.
Right, we can already see the impact on the art creation industry and the film creation. There have been lots of questions about this and lots of work already done, but it's not already perfect, even on these fields that are a bit more popular. Yeah, of course, it will be important to protect artists and musicians over the use of generative AI, because we want them to use AI. They also want to use it as a new tool, as a potential like a new instrument, or a new technology that will have impact over the creativity, because they will be able to use this tool to create new things, new experience, not only new music, but also maybe new way of consuming music. You can think about live performance, you can think about having an adaptive live performance where the artist directly interact with the audience using AI to interpret maybe an improvisation, things like that. But you can also imagine adaptive music directly in a video game or during your everyday life. Mm-hmm. They can adapt to your music taste, to the scene you are having in the video game, or just to your emotions.
Super interesting. It is a passionate in topics. So if we had like a few takeaways, like what would it be?
So in general, we can see that like in art and the movie industry and other creative areas, the AI for music field is moving fast. It's transforming every day. You have new tools, you have new opportunities. So it's arriving, it's there, and there's already artists experiencing with this. We'll see new creation, new genres, new experience, but it's also a way for maybe to have more beginners in the field. It will be easier to start creating music with a good quality. It will be easier to start music in your room just with a guitar, and then you add the band behind to try things. It will be easier to experiment with new things and to like simulate stuff. It will be easier, as you said, to reach a good sound, to reach good engineering of the sound.
That's a great summary. And it makes me think, you know, when you think about the workflow, when you are a music producer or songwriter, it will bring new ideas, it will bring a new process. And we can have the parallel with the clients we're working with today. Most of the time we are trying to fit AI in all processes. So AI is going to improve all processes. That's partially true, I think. AI and tools will bring new processes, new workflows. It will transform the functions, for instance. We see that every day with agents, with AI and so on. A lot of things can happen. So it is also like a new way to create. It opens new possibilities, and which is super exciting too.
Yeah, it's a perfect conclusion. Thank you, Julien, for the discussion, and let's keep trying.
Thank you. Thank you, Nicholas.